Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and on each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan on to talk about Voyager. For this episode, my guest is Brianna Wu, Democratic candidate for Congress, a game developer and software engineer, and one of the hosts of the Rocket podcast on Relay FM. Welcome, Brianna.
It's such a pleasure to be here. You know, when we first got to know each other, the first thing that made me go, I want to be good friends with Jean, was your love of Voyager. So I'm glad we can finally talk about it.
Yes, me too. Actually, I have dug back into my Twitter history because I remember sort of the moment where Voyager went from thing that I watch sometimes just to relax to thing that I was feeling really passionate about sharing with other people. And it was, you were discussing something about Voyager and defending it on Twitter. And I said, I don't understand why, when it's so easy to pick apart Star Trek episodes in general, that Voyager is held to what looks like a double standard to me.
Yeah. Have you ever seen like TNG?
Yes.
There's no episode of Voyager that's worse than the best of that season. Like, I'm sorry. It's just a fact. And let's get some perspective, people.
Yes, I agree. So, I have this idea of developing a game where people have like, it's like a card deck and you have to play your Star Trek episodes and they have, you know, values assigned to them. And I bet the person with the most Voyager cards would win. But I would probably design it that way, to be honest. So, before we get into talking about, so this episode, we are dedicating to one of our favorite characters, Seven of Nine. Woo! And I'm excited about that. Before we get into talking about Seven and all of her awesomeness, why don't you tell me a little bit more about like your first memories of Star Trek, what you were watching first, you know, how you got to become a Star Trek fan?
Sure. So, I grew up in a family of kind of conservative Christian people. And, they wouldn't even let me watch, say, Masters of the Universe growing up because it was, it had sorcery in it. So that was the kind of family I kind of was born into or adopted into, rather. And I remember the first time I saw Star Trek, I was at a friend of my grade's party, and they were rerunning TOS at night. I remember watching it. It was just, I mean, I could see there was a lot of brilliance there, but I didn't really get into it. Then in, what year was it? Was it 1994 or 1995 when UPN came out?
Yeah.
And Voyager was their premiere show. I remember watching this and just being absolutely mesmerized. Like, this was my Voyager. This was my Star Trek from my generation. It had all these wonderful characters on it, like a woman starship captain and B'Elanna Torres. And you had this grand story about trying to get across the entire galaxy back home. And I remember watching that and just being astonished by how great a premise that was. It didn't hurt that, I was a teenager and Tom Paris was also pretty cute. So, I just fell in love with the show. And it is just from that moment on, like every time a DVD came out, boom, bought it. Blu-ray came out, boom, bought it. Comes out on Netflix, watch it again. And I just go through the entire series every year or two.
Me too. And also, yes, Tom Paris. I'm glad to find another Tom Paris fan out there.
Yes.
I did think he was cute. I still think he's cute. And but when I first watched it, I was much later because the period of my life when Voyager launched, so that was January 1995, in fact, I wasn't watching TV at that point in my life. And so I kind of missed it. And you know how it was when you missed it, right? And so,
well, this was back before video on demand. You
right.
had to wait for a television station to play it. Right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. So yeah, when it came out on Netflix and I had some time on my hands, it's almost like I like to be sick because that gives me the excuse to watch episode after episode of a show that I've been waiting to watch. And that's how I ended up watching Voyager. And I was like, wow, this is really great. My interest didn't wane during the seven seasons. I just kept watching them to the end, and I really liked it. And it was only later that I realized that not everybody liked it as much as me.
I know.
I was like, what?
Hey, you know, Jean, something I think about all the time is, you know, I realize this isn't a political podcast, but I love to imagine what would happen if a show like Voyager came out today,
yeah,
where the cast of the show is mostly, it's close to 50% women, right? And a lot of the women in commanding roles are women. Can you imagine what the geek response would be today? Like, I remember in the 90s, it was like, yeah, girl power. Like, you know, this is awesome. And today, I think every single one of those cast members would get, you know, the Gamergate treatment. Like, so I think in some ways, I think it was an awesome moment in time where you could have the show and just not have the politics around it.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting perspective, because I went to see Kate Mulgrew give a reading a few years ago in Seattle, and she was awesome, of course, and her book is awesome, Born with Teeth. But I also asked a question at that reading, and I said, what did you suffer back then, you know, the way that people suffer now? And this was definitely when Gamergate was just, you know, cranking up to its highest peaks. And that, she wasn't really aware, you know, of that. And she also mentioned, like, what the only thing she could say is, like, there was one person who snuck into the set to leave her like flowers or something, and it was like slightly creepy.
Wow. That would be great.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. And she just looked at me like, she says, I don't do social media. She says, I don't think it would be a good idea, do you? And I was like,
you are
right,
me?
Captain Janeway.
Like, all over the Captain Janeway Twitter, like, lay it on me. Captain Janeway, like, management or leadership tips every day. Like, I would follow that Twitter.
Yeah.
So,
well,
never start a morning meeting without coffee. That's a good management tip, right?
That's right. So, yeah, you know, what I'm noticing since I launched this podcast is that a lot of people are coming forward to say to me, oh, wow, you know, I've been meaning to rewatch this, or I have always liked this, or, you know, there hasn't been, you know, any place to discuss Voyager in the way that people talk about other series of Star Trek. So I'm excited to, you know, sort of get our band of Voyager fans a corner of the internet that they can call their own.
I love it. Let's talk about this episode.
Yeah, we watched Equinox, and that is one of the best episodes of Star Trek Voyager and of Star Trek in general ever, I think. Yeah. And I was interested that you picked it. So I asked Brianna, like I've been asking all the guests, to pick an episode of Star Trek that they'd like to watch in conjunction with talking about the theme of the show, which is 7 of 9. And when she picked Equinox, I thought, oh, that's interesting, because there are a lot of episodes 7 is the star of. And then rewatching it, I realized, oh, I think I understand now why Brianna picked this one, because it's a great showcase for 7's great qualities. And but yes, now if you haven't watched Equinox and you want to, and you don't want to be spoiled, this is the point where you should exit the podcast and go watch it. It's a 2-parter. The last episode of season 5 and the first episode of season 6. And basically it's when the Voyager crew finds out they're not alone in the galaxy.
Can I set this episode up? Because it's one of my absolute favorites.
Yes, please.
You've got to understand, we've gone through, for the most part, 5 seasons of Voyager, and mm-hmm. we've never really seen other Starfleet people in the Delta Quadrant. And then you're out there and you see this tiny science ship made by the Federation under attack. And your first feeling is like, oh my God, they've found a second crew. They're not alone anymore. And you meet Captain Ransom, and you're like, oh my gosh, he's been through quite a lot. So it's this episode about Voyager finding this smaller ship that was a science vessel that's kind of been trapped out there the way that they are. And without the weapons and, you know, equipment to kind of punch back, they've really found themselves decimated out there, barely surviving, barely holding on. As the episode goes on, you find Ransom has made some choices that are are very disturbing in order to survive. And the reason I love this episode is for many reasons. Throughout so much of Voyager, you see Captain Janeway. She's always firmly in control. And when you're a woman leader, like, you really think twice about showing anger, showing emotion. But this is an episode where she kind of, she starts to tiptoe up to that line, just like Captain Ransom did. And you have Seven, who's kind of on this quest to become more human. And you see her really juxtaposing what she sees of Ransom and Janeway during this time to kind of judging humanity based on that and our worst qualities. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, this is it's a very powerful episode to me. Is that kind of how you feel?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It is good to have Janeway have some serious issues, you know, serious shortcomings at this point, because it also gives the rest of the cast something to do. You know, you get a much more interesting Chakotay when he's got to try to decide how to deal with Janeway's poor judgment, very poor judgment.
Yeah. And just to give listeners an idea of what we're talking about, there's an episode, there's a part of this where Ransom basically steals Voyager's equipment to keep them safe from this enemy, and they shoot off and they kidnap parts of the crew, and they're members of the Equinox left on Voyager. Janeway makes a decision to torture them and threaten their life.
Yes.
She basically puts them in a cargo bay and turns off the shields, allowing the people that are upset with them to come in and kill this member of the Equinox, which is, you know, Star Trek is not 24. This is a really shocking thing to see. And Chakotay is just horrified by it. And there's no moment where, you know, Chakotay gets through to Janeway or she apologizes or admits she crossed a line. It's just like Janeway going too far because she's so upset with Equinox and Captain Ransom. At the same time, the reason I think this episode is so good is you see Seven, who's trapped on the Equinox ship, and she is choosing to make a different choice. Mm-hmm. She is putting her ethics and her morality and her integrity first and literally risking her life to stop giving the Equinox what they want. And like, she is being tortured. So she's on the other side of this coin. And I just find like an episode where Janeway is kind of at odds with Seven is always good. But this is one where these stark differences in how they see leadership and duty, I think it's really striking.
And I also think that it brings out, you know, in Janeway, something that's been part of her character since, you know, the pilot, which is she believes in sticking to Starfleet principles and Federation principles. And when she comes across somebody like Ransom, who has pretty much tossed them out the window, it has an effect on her that, you know, I don't think she anticipated, and certainly we didn't see this coming, is that she's really mad at him for being for violating and betraying the same oaths that she swore to. So whereas you have Seven, who, you know, has been a Borg for all of her adult life, she doesn't have that kind of Starfleet mentality. She has what, as you refer to it, you know, a morality and ethics that she's learned from her Starfleet colleagues. And that's more important to her than whether or not, you know, certain directives of the Federation have been violated.
Yeah. No, I think that's dead on. Can we take a beat here and kind of go back in time to what year did season 4 come out and the introduction of Seven?
Well, yeah, if it started in 95, I think it was 99. So,
okay.
So
at this time, you know, people were saying, oh, Voyager's episodes, their ratings are so bad. They're so bad, even though you kill for those kinds of ratings.
I know. I was so looking funny at the numbers recently,
like, wow,
and going
this
like,
would be a smash hit show. Yeah. So everybody's critiquing it for that. And, you know, there was a narrative that happened at the time, like, oh, you know, Star Trek is just bringing on this babe to bring ratings to the show. And, you know, when they're promoting it, it's this actress, Jeri Ryan, and she's in the skin tight costume. And, you know, she's a beautiful woman. There's no way mm-hmm. around that. I mean, so is Catherine, you know, Captain Janeway and B'Elanna Torres, like all the women on the show are gorgeous. But, yeah, she's a traditionally attractive, and guys kind of go nuts to that. And I think there's a very gendered difference in how people perceive this character, because mm-hmm. to me, what I saw going on to the show was a character that was, she was an engineer. She was willing to kind of dig in and start projects herself, like the astrometrics lab.
Right.
She was unafraid to like stand up to authority. She was commanding. And what I saw wasn't a character that was, I mean, she's certainly attractive, but I saw a character with qualities that I deeply admired.
Yeah.
The ability to stand up when people are telling you to shut up and sit down, that is a difficult quality for a woman to have at times. And, you know, Seven just kind of bypassed all that socialization.
Yes. Right?
So I think more than any other character throughout all of Star Trek, Seven of Nine is the one I feel the closest emotional connection with, because she really is trying to dig deep and overcome her shortcomings. And she's willing to really look at things in a difficult way and even admit when she's wrong. And I think there's a real strength of character there that just frankly, the public has never really given her a chance to take credit for.
No, I absolutely agree. And I do think that she gets to do things as a female character because she's a Borg that's been de-assimilated. And that she gets to be forthright in a way that other characters, men and women, you know, they have difficulty with having conflict with one another. So it's an interesting way of giving somebody the freedom to be right, to be unapologetic for being right when she is, and to be relatively unconcerned with other people's feelings about how, you know, about what she's doing and how she is. So
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. If you think about the contrast that's interesting to me with Torres, is that Torres is also headstrong and very, very smart and does give her opinion, you know, without regard to trying to make other people feel okay. But they assign a lot of that to her Klingon personality, her half Klingon background, that she's allowed to be mad, and she does get mad, which of course Seven never gets mad at anybody, really. She just gets intense.
She does get feisty. Like, you know, I would even say, like, there's this brilliant episode of B'Elanna Torres where her Klingon half and her human half are separated,
yes,
and both of them are very weak, frankly. Like, the one side needs the other. Sorry, can you hear my dogs barking?
I can, but I think it'll be all right.
With B'Elanna Torres, like, her anger is almost coded as a part of her that she needs to suppress.
Yeah.
And she needs to get over. And I have to admit, like, I'm someone who, as I've grown as a leader, and certainly as I'm running for United States Congress, one of the interesting things about it is it really makes you take a hard look at your shortcomings as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no moment in running for Congress where you can just lash out at someone saying something bad to you, or, you know, just fire people willy-nilly. Like, you have to really think and become bigger than yourself. That's something B'Elanna doesn't really get a chance to do, but Seven does. And I really respect her because of that.
I mean, one of the things that I have posited about Voyager, and the reason why I wrote up a whole viewer's guide to it, because I want people to watch it, like, watch it through. Don't just pick and choose an episode here or there and then declare that it's bad. is that with Seven, I think, yes, if you didn't really watch the show, you would only see the physical aspects that are, you know, I would say, unfortunately, very much, you know, costume design wise, yes. is not good choices yes. that they made there. But if you watch it for a while, you know, once you get into the character, that stuff just falls away. I have admired her intellect and her you mentioned how she started the astrometrics lab. I thought she is not hanging around waiting for people to tell her what to do. She really right. does get out there and make up her own projects. And I find that very, I find it inspiring. I find her quite inspiring along with Janeway and Torres.
What I think is so frustrating about the actress Jeri Ryan is if you look at the role she's had since Voyager, it's like, I don't know if you've seen Bosch on
I have.
On video. Yes. Like, she's a great character in there, but she plays like this heiress, like, yeah. you know, sex pot.
Femme fatale.
Yeah. And, you know, her character arc there has all the beats of that kind of story you're imagining it does. And mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, my friend, Jen Frank in the game industry, she's a game journalist and she has a really fantastic piece about like when you're attractive and this is all you get considered to be, and people don't let you be anything outside of this very narrow box. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really true with this actress. And you know, like you can be gorgeous and be an engineer. Like you can be hot headed and be a woman. Like, you know, there's this entire range of emotion.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful that we had a moment in time, like before social media, where we could really have stories about her.
Yeah. That reminds me, though, I have to say about Bosch, Titus Welliver.
Yes.
He's in Equinox, you know, he's the.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I completely forgot about that. You're right.
So he's the title character of Bosch. And I do like him. I liked him in Equinox. I mean, I knew he was going to be bad news. But it was cute to see him come aboard Voyager and be like an old boyfriend of B'Elanna Torres. And anyway, that was pretty funny. So
I didn't even recognize him because he's so much younger in this.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. He plays a really great character in this. He's like this, you know, this rogue survivor of the Equinox. And,
yeah.
You know, another thing I love about the Equinox episode, though, is the portrayal of PTSD. And, you know,
yeah,
I've talked about this in my public role running for Congress. But, you know, you can't go through something like Gamergate and not have it affect you mentally. And for me, yeah, surprise, surprise, having bricks thrown through my window, having people send me videos of wearing a skull mask, holding a knife up to the camera, saying they were outside my house to slit my throat, you know, all those kinds of things. It left me with a case of PTSD that, you know, thankfully, thanks to therapy and a lot of hard work, I've moved past. But what I love about this episode is you do have what I think is a really honest portrayal of PTSD from the Equinox crew.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from some of the characters that are maybe a little, they're a little less distanced from their humanity than maybe Ransom and
yeah.
Bosch are, but it's like they hear sounds and they have flashbacks and they have to just exit an elevator and
yes.
call up the Jeffries tubes. And I love that because it's a moment of kind of reflecting on what life is like in a war zone and allowing people to be fragile. And I really love that.
Yeah. Bringing a second crew, you know, to Voyager and having them interact, that brought out a lot of interesting human qualities of the crews, both crews, and I appreciate it that they did that. And I do think that, I mean, that crew had already had the same experience that Voyager had of being transported by the caretaker and presumably having gone through that whole experience of being medically experimented on, you know, welcome to the Delta Quadrant here. We're going to stick a needle in your abdomen.
yeah.
So things only went from horrible to worse for them. And as you say, that was a small ship that wasn't intended to be able to defend itself much, and they really did suffer. But the crux of their problem, though, that they brought onto themselves is one of those questions that Star Trek, when they raise it, it's that where there's a choice between your annihilation or annihilating another race, that there's no good answer for that. And so showing what happens to people when they make the choice of preserving themselves at the expense of another species is, it's very stark and disturbing. And that I appreciate that they didn't shy away from showing that things were going to be really bad and that they'd lose their way. They wouldn't know what they were doing anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, this is, I think this would be one of my critiques of Voyager, though, is, you know, season one, you have the McKee and the Voyager crew and they're integrated together. And there are a couple of episodes with a little bit of tension, but mm-hmm. more than anything, it's like they're magically become a Starfleet crew, right? Mm-hmm. Like there may be 12 episodes, maybe 15, that are really about the tension between Starfleet and McKee. And here at the same way, at the end of the Equinox episode, you have half of the crew like basically ending up on Voyager, right?
Yeah.
And they never revisit it and talk to any of these really strong characters. And I think that would have been an amazing story. Like, how do you find your way back to your humanity? How do you find your way? How do you get redemption after killing, how many was it, 63 of those creatures to just go home a little faster? That's a story I wish they'd told. And I think it's worth saying, you know, back in, you know, the 90s to 2000, episode, like the most you could get episodically was one or two episodes, like mm-hmm. sequentially. But I feel like it would have been a much better story if we'd seen these characters again.
Yeah. Well, I think that they have, they have been able to do that with, I mean, Seven is sort of an example of taking somebody on and then they are a main character. And of course, that was always the intention. You know, can you imagine there could have been an episode where they, you know, sort of like Hugh in the Next Generation, where they have a Borg they become friends with and then that Borg goes away. That would have been, they pick up that kid, Icheb, at one point, who was a Borg assimilated young kid, and he becomes, you know, sort of a semi-regular crew member, and that was good. And they also, one of my favorite places where they bring a character back, and you weren't expecting it, you think, we've heard everything we're going to hear, is one of the Maquis from the first, from the second season. There's Lon Suter, who was who had actually killed somebody, you know, and he's a murderer, and Tuvok is the one who's trying to figure out who was the murderer and then why did he murder somebody. And it's just, he's a sociopath. Great actor, Brad Dourif. And you think, well, now Suter's in the brig forever and they bring him back for basics. And he becomes, you know, one of the characters who saves people.
And he even finds his own redemption, which I think is just amazing. So
they could have done more of things like that. And they did, you know, they'd bring Seska back every once in a while in some kind of digital format.
So I have to admit, I don't like Seska because she feels like a bad stereotype of what like a male writer thinks a woman villain should be. Like, you know, Seska gets herself pregnant to Chakotay and then starts seducing like the, you know, all of that. It's just like, oh, this isn't good.
No, that was definitely I felt like they ruined Seska at that point because I did like her up until that point, that she was so sneaky and evil, and also just the whole notion that everybody on that Maquis ship was basically some kind of traitor to Chakotay.
Yeah. All of them. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So as we're talking about Seven, I have to ask, what is your absolute favorite Seven episode? Because Scorpion, I mean, it's a really strong one, but there's so many to pick from.
Yeah. Well, I like the one which is called One, I believe, where Seven is in charge of the ship while they go through some kind of space where the rest of the crew has to be in stasis, but it doesn't affect Seven for whatever reason because of her Borg implants. And that's a Twilight Zone episode, basically, starring Seven.
Sure
is. I like that because, you know, they show Seven having mental health issues.
Yeah. Well, mental health care. Like she has issues with that. Also, like, you can make an amazing bingo card of how many episodes of Voyager get saved because of Seven's Borg implants.
Yes.
It's like everyone she's in.
Yes.
See, that's a really good one. I have to admit, that episode's hard for me to watch because I think the Doctor and Seven kind of in the same space and they start fighting with each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they just have such a great relationship. It's kind of hard to watch two friends fighting, if that makes sense. I really love that episode. I think Timeless is absolutely amazing, which lets Harry Kim kind of be the stars.
Yes.
Going back in time and trying to save it. But I think Scorpion, like, this is the 1-2 episode that really introduces Seven. It's
yes.
the end of season 3, the start of season 4. And it's Voyager basically trying to make an alliance with species 8472 to, you know, get across Borg space. I'm sorry, they're trying to make an alliance with the Borg to go across species 8472 space, and it doesn't go well. It goes very well.
It does not go well.
It's a really great start for her character because you see her as, like, really, like, she believes in the Borg ideology. She does.
Yes.
She's on Team Borg. And then, like, she finds herself in this situation where everything that brought her comfort is taken away, and she's trying to find her way. And I just absolutely, it's a very powerful start to a character.
Yes, I agree. I think that you get to see, you know, what she's going to be like as soon as they de-Borgify her. I'm glad that we really got to see her as a Borg, and, you know, like a true Borg, not stylized like a Borg queen. You know, she's not a sexy Borg. You know, she's just
she's got stuff sticking out of her face and Borg. Patchy skin and all of that.
She's you know, we do get to see what she was like, and that she really was even once she's separated from the collective, she still has certain Borg what's the word, she has those Borg ideologies are still with her in a way that you can't necessarily argue with, you know. She just, it makes the Borg less like crazy alien when a human looking person says what you're doing is inefficient.
Right.
And you know, I don't know why you want to do it that way, and you think, oh, okay. Like, that's not she's just efficient.
Yeah. She's trying to get the job done. She's a project manager. She's trying to ship a product. And, you know, maybe she needs an HR department because the human part of her job is not her forte. But she's trying to ship.
Exactly. I do like the friendship between Seven and Naomi Wildman.
I do too.
You know, using a child who is not herself all human. You know, she's half Katarin, so she experiences herself as, you know, as somewhat alien to the rest of the crew, but she's also the way that kids don't have the same, like, prejudices and fears already baked in adults have. So
I love that. So yeah, just a fantastic character overall, and I hope that your listeners, like, will go through, watch it, and realize, like, Seven is a character, it's a lot more. She's a, like, to judge her to be a sex symbol and that's all is just a real underestimation of not just the actress but of the power of the writing behind the character. Like she's like every Star Trek has a character is trying to become more human. On DS9, it's Odo. On, you know, on TNG, it's Data. On Discovery, it's Michael Burnham. Like this is the story of Star Trek. And for her, I really do feel like hers is the best arc of any of them, in my opinion. So there it is.
Well, I think that we could wrap it up on that point. She's, I mean, Seven, there's many facets of Seven and many great episodes with Seven. And we're not here to discuss them all, but to pique your interest to go and watch some yourself. And this won't be the last time we talk about Seven of Nine, because she is
probably one of not. Yeah.
The great, great characters of Voyager. Well, Brianna, I hope that you can make time sometime in the future to come back to Voyager, revisit it, and we'll pick up with somebody else and or something else that we want to talk about.
I'll make you a deal, Gene. When I win in 2020, we'll record an episode of your podcast from my office in the House of Representatives. How does that sound?
That's a great deal.
All right.
I look forward to that day. I hope you'll have Voyager watching parties up on Capitol Hill.
We'll do it.
I find it's the best way to relax after a tough day is to watch some Janeway kicking butt. And thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find Voyager Revisited online at VoyagerCast.com. Follow us on Twitter and on Microdot blog at Voyager_cast. This show is one of the many pop culture podcasts found on the Incomparable Network. I will be back in 2 weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. Until then, time's up.